Hanselminutes.com. It's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 188, recorded live Thursday, November 12th, 2009. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Phil Hack.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And you'll have to forgive us on this episode because there's a house going up next to my house. So if you hear hammering in the background, that's because there's hammering in the background. And it turns out that's not something you can easily remove from an audio tape. I'm sitting down today with Phil Hack. How's it going, Phil?
It's going well.
So something announced at PDC this morning. What's the big announcement?
That we had the release of ASP.NET MVC version 2 beta available for download.
Very cool. So this is beta, and will there be another beta or many betas or CTPs and things like that before release, or is this a pretty significant release from MVC 2?
This is a pretty significant release in that this is mostly feature complete as far as large feature areas. We have some bug fixes we plan to do and some maybe minor DCRs or design change requests, like minor changes to design, you know, really tiny features. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, the big features we want to do, completely done, and we're not taking on any new big features. And the next release after this is going to be a release candidate, and then after that is RTM.
Okay, well, so you're pretty close then at this point. It's just one more release, and then it's done.
Yeah, part of the reason for that is that we are shipping co-shipping within Visual Studio 2010. So we have this is a very hard deadline. So there's no if we slip, we're not in the product.
Oh wow! So Visual Studio 2010 is coming out. What do they say, March 22nd?
Oh, is that public?
I believe so. Yeah, it's on the interwebs.
Okay, so yeah, so we'll be in there.
Okay, so sometime between today and March 22nd, there'll be a release candidate, and then you're shipping that day then. Very cool.
Yep. Yeah, obviously, since we have to meet whatever quality gates and all this, process that, to get mm-hmm. into the product, so we'll actually be done much before March 22nd.
Mm-hmm. So what's the focus of version 2?
So version 2, the primary focus is on looking at the enterprise and productivity scenarios. So version 2 has a lot of cool stuff like templated helpers. This is a feature where you can pass a model into a display method or an editor method, and we'll find an appropriate template to render that model object. We'll render either an editor for it, like a bunch of inputs, or we'll render a nice display for it for you. And it's very reminiscent of field templates in dynamic data.
Well, that's interesting because I was talking to Scott Hunter on an episode of Channel 9, and he was kind of commenting that initially there was this kind of big pillars of ASP.NET thing. There was like web forms was a pillar and MVC, and then dynamic data was its own thing, when in fact it's more of kind of a foundational. It's kind of more turned on its side. So rather than being dynamic data as vertical pillar, it's more dynamic data as foundational element. That's something that's baked into web forms and MVC. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah. So it's more that we're taking ideas and principles from dynamic data, and not taking dynamic data itself per se, but mm-hmm. We're taking a lot of those ideas and putting them into MVC. For example, one of the things that we're doing for client validation that's different from dynamic data is that dynamic data will just simply add a web form validator controls. What we're doing is we're floating up JSON metadata based on your data annotations, mm-hmm. and then you can attach a client validation library to that, and you can write your own or use the one we supply, and then that will hook up client validation to your form based on the metadata that's on your view model objects, mm-hmm. and so this is an approach that was inspired by a framework developed by someone out there in the community, Steve Sanderson, who built the XVAL framework. And so we saw that, and we thought, oh, that's a really cool idea. Maybe we can bake that more deeply into the framework based on some of those principles, and make. But able to make the framework more amenable to that change than he could do outside of the framework, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. So let's get into a little detail on this. And you made the comment of a view model. You put this metadata on the view model. I've noticed that sometimes you'll see samples, the Nerd Dinner sample as kind of a good slash bad example, where the model and the view model kind of either are interchangeable or they mix or there just isn't a view model at all. Is this new technique, how important is the view model? How important is the separation of the two?
So I'm pretty guilty of often in demos just taking a model from a database and then passing it to the view and saying, hey, this is how you do it. It turns out, I think, as you start to build real applications and larger applications, you realize that you really need a model that's specific to the view. For example, if you have a product and you're sending it to some details page, there may be other things on that view that you need to turn on and off. So you might have you might want extra Boolean properties on your model to say show this, don't show that, so that your view is fairly dumb and just does what the model kind of prints out properties of the view model. Mm-hmm. So there's a term that a lot of people use, view model or view specific models, what I often call it. Mm-hmm. Is that rather than sending the actual product, basically create a view model object that has all maybe the properties that you want specifically for this view and send that to the view. Sometimes for very, very simple demos, I'll still just send the actual model and then throw some properties in view data. And I think, I'm still not completely opposed to that technique. I think it works in simple scenarios. But I think, as you run into problems with that, as you start to scale up, you should switch to, a more maintainable model.
Mm-hmm. How important do you think it is?
Unfortunately, I don't get to build really, really large apps, but of all the people I've talked to who are building larger apps, they all use this technique, and they find it very important to, especially if strong typing is in the view is important to you. Now, I'm particularly a fan of dynamic languages. So for me, I don't always see strong typing as being absolutely necessary. I sometimes see that, some mixture of the two, kind of hits the sweet spot. But more and more, I like the approach because as you're thinking, building the view model, it does help you think about, well, what are the decisions that need to be made on the view? What are the pieces of information that need to be put on the view? And then you have this one class that encapsulates, what that is. The way I like to think about it a lot of times is that a view is kind of like one of those throw cloths or something that you stretch over the frame of a chair to make a chair. So the frame being your view model, and the view is just something you stretch over it.
Mm-hmm. And the dynamic, the metadata, this in system.component model though, right? This metadata I want to put on my view model.
Mm-hmm.
And this can be put on the model or on the view model. It doesn't really matter. All you want is annotations on objects, and you'll handle the rest. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
How much do you think ASP.NET MVC kind of requires or needs additional help from the outside? Like if one were going to really get religious with the view model versus model stuff, wouldn't we require something like AutoMapper to make life easier, AutoMapper being an open source app that maps one object to another object? Or is that overstating it?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just talking with a coworker about this, and that's one of those things we're starting to look at is what are the pain points with doing this approach versus other approaches? And, I think the thing is, as we see something where we really feel it belongs in the core framework, we'll probably pull it in. Something like AutoMapper, we haven't yet looked at, but I think, as I'm starting to think about ahead of what we're going to do for the, version 3, that's the kind of thing I want to look at is, that seems to make things a lot easier.
Mm-hmm.
So should we have some way of doing that? Should we simply tell people to use this? Should we include it? And so those are some of the questions, I'll be looking at in the next version. I think AutoMapper is a great approach to that, for the case where a lot of times your view models simply have are a superset of your model in terms of what properties are on there, and it kind of sucks to have to copy them all. So it's nice to have some programmatic way to do that, to populate your view model. So, and AutoMapper is a great way to do that.
Yeah, yeah. The AutoMapper lets you get rid of a lot of the, what I call monkey code.
Yeah, you know, the right-hand, left-hand code.
Yeah, just sitting there slapping the keyboard, you know, and it's just no fun. Left-hand, right-hand, that kind of stuff. It's and more and more I'm looking for ways in my ASP.NET MVC projects to avoid repeating myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the view model thing just seems to be one of those places where I'm always repeating myself.
Yeah, so that's definitely a case where we need to get drier. As in, dry as in don't repeat yourself.
You know, that the tragedy about the whole dry concept is that every time you say it on a podcast, you have to repeat yourself and then explain what dry means.
The irony is not lost on me. The challenge with dry sometimes is that, you know, you could just send the model over there and not repeat yourself. But then there's more coupling of your view to your actual domain objects that rather than your view model. So, there's a small amount of repetition there in that you're repeating these properties, but it's not always the case that your domain objects map exactly to your view. A lot of times, a classic example of why we need view models is the confirm password screen, right? If I have a person object and he has a username and a password, he probably doesn't have a confirm password property on that, right? So there's a classic case where you really need a view model. You need something... Mm-hmm. You know, that isn't one of your domain objects in order to fulfill this user interface.
Yeah. One of the things I got nailed with, I was in Sweden speaking recently, and I gave a talk on MVC, and one of your lead devs there, Levi Broderick, and he noticed that I was using a view model on the way out, meaning I was getting some stuff back from the model, passing it into a view, and displaying a view model. But I was taking a model on the way in, and that mismatch is kind of a common thing. He wanted me to take the same object in and out, and that got me thinking too about the kinds of trouble that you can get into.
Yeah, that's another area where, you know, if you're using our expression based helpers. So, for example, one of the things we're adding in beta are strongly typed UI helpers. And so these differ from templated helpers, where templated helpers are basically, hey, here's some object. I want you to render UI for that. Where strongly typed helpers are more, here's a text box, here's a text area. Here, you know, I'm going to tell you what UI elements to do, but I'm going to give you an expression against the model, right? So I might say text box for M such that M dot first name. Mm-hmm. And so it's going to look at the model and the metadata, and it's going to render a text box. And it's going to render the right fields for that, the field name for that text box, like, you know, first name or person.first name or whatever it is.
Right.
Now, when you submit that back to your action method, that needs to match up with the thing that your action method is receiving, right?
Right.
Because
exactly.
You built that expression against an object. Most likely, that should be the same object that you're receiving in.
Right, because if you're using display for, or more interestingly, of course, editor for, and you're saying, give me an editor for a dinner, one could argue that that's a serialization format. It's going to serialize that object as an HTML form.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to expect to get that same thing back.
But there's the other side of the question where, like, your view model is sort of the model for the view. Isn't the stuff that's incoming really like a form post model or action argument model? Like, isn't it kind of a DTO object?
Yeah, that be a data transfer class? Object.
And you know, you could take that approach and be strict about that, but then you start to really feel the effects of repeating yourself a lot.
Yeah.
And one of the things is, well, maybe that's where, if you're using a strongly typed language, maybe that's where code generation comes in handy, right? You just generate, you take a model and then you generate your incoming and outgoing or something like that. The other approach you could say is, you know, like, I have a bunch of unit tests and I'm okay with using dynamic languages or something. So I'm going to think about what a dynamic language would do. And you start doing view page a dynamic and you create in your action method, you new up an expando object, you set some properties on that and then you just send it to the view page.
Yeah.
And on the incoming, and I haven't yet tried this, but I haven't yet tried the case where what happens if you try to model bind to a dynamic object going in. I'm guessing it won't work, but you know, maybe that's something we look at for the future, is making that work, right? So that you could have a public, you know, action result edit a dynamic of O, and then you in your action method, you just do O.firstname, O.lastname.
Hey, everybody, this is Scott coming at you from another place in time. No doubt you probably bump into testing tasks now and then in your work, and you know writing functional tests is probably not your favorite thing. It's kind of difficult, takes time, and the results can be dubious. Well, get ready to start liking tests thanks to Telerik with the new WebEye testing framework. Building web automation tests is a breeze. You've got code automation with advanced ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight applications. You can write a single test, have it executed against multiple browsers at once. You benefit from a rich API. There's link support, integration with Visual Studio unit testing, also NUnit, XUnit, and MBUnit. Not to mention the free wrappers for Telerik RAD controls for ASP.NET Ajax and Silverlight, all shipping with Telerik's new testing tool. One of the best features, the WebEye testing framework, which is developed by Art of Test, is it's absolutely free. If you've already got hooked on WebEye testing framework, start using it right away. Go to Telerik.com for more info. Thanks a lot.
How do other frameworks do it? I mean, some places like in Nerd Dinner will do a regular model bind and a dinner gets passed in, and other places we'll use a form collection. And the form collection is kind of our punting, where it's like, you know, it's not really a model and I don't really feel like making a view model, so I'll just do a form collection.
Yeah.
None of it really feels awesome though, you know. It's never quite as clean on the way in.
Yeah, so I personally like taking these objects in via the action method parameter because I find that it kind of maps the way I think about it, and it also is a lot easier to write unit tests for. You know, I just new up a product, pass it to my action method, and say, do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the form collection approach, a lot of times you do that because it sort of almost is dependent on what type of data access you're using. Some data access layers require you to new up the object and then make the changes and then attach them to the whatever context, whereas others can take an existing populated object and attach to the context as a changed object. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you're thinking about the update scenario, you kind of need to know what the old values are and the new values are. Mm-hmm. And so that's why there's sort of that distinction for, like, a create method, it's very easy to just take in the object as the action method parameter. But for an update method, you might just take in the form collection.
Right, and that's exactly the problem I caught myself with.
Now, other frameworks do it, for example, in Rails, I believe you grab everything from a params collection. So you have, like, params, you know, bracket, quote, first name, params, bracket, quote, last name. But there's all, I believe there you can just, you know, create a dynamic object from the params collection that maps to what you're trying to create, so because of you know, the ability to do duck typing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't used it in a long time, so I'm not quite familiar. So it's a very different world in dynamic languages than it is in, like, C#.
Well, that doesn't that mean that ASP.NET MVC 2 or, you know, 2 plus 1 could be something very different if you insisted that you'll only run on .NET 4?
Yeah, so ASP.NET 2 is going to run on 3.5 and 4. ASP.NET MVC 3 is going to take a 4 dependency.
You said ASP.NET 2, so ASP.NET MVC 2.
ASP.NET 3.5 SP1 and ASP.NET 4. But ASP.NET MVC 3 is going to take a ASP.NET 4 dependency, which means that for MVC 3, we can take advantage of everything that .NET 4 has to offer.
All right. That's what I wanted to know. So let me see if I understand this. I'm going to kind of paraphrase back as the I'm the user. So I've got an ASP.NET 1 project now, mm-hmm. and I'm running it on Visual Studio 2008, which is .NET 3.5. Mm-hmm. I'm going to want to upgrade to MVC 2, and I will mm-hmm. be able to do that, and I'll mm-hmm. continue to use 3.5 if I want to.
Yep.
I could also move over to .NET 4 and VS 2010.
Mm-hmm.
But come the MVC 3 timeframe, that's going to be a .NET 4.0 only thing.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So that means that you're going to ship in the box with Visual Studio 2010, or I can go and download it and add it to Visual Studio 2008.
Yes. Yes. Good point.
Okay. But this has limited you to the kind of, like, crazy out there dynamic language stuff that you might have been able to do because you want to support both platforms.
To some degree, yes. To some degree, no, right? So, you know, Scott Guthrie has been doing some experimentations, and he's shown that, you know, you can use ViewPage Dynamic if you're running on ASP.NET 4. Now, the framework itself obviously doesn't do anything special to maybe support more exotic scenarios like that, but if you just wrote a view page of Dynamic and you passed an Expando object in your as your model, mm-hmm. you'll be able to access those within the view using the dot syntax, you know, like foo.model.foo.
Can you explain that term Expando object to the listeners that may not know what that means?
Oh, great. Yeah, sure. So .NET 4 introduces this new object called Expando object. And it's a object that is a dynamic object. So if I go dynamic, foo equals new expando object, I can start setting properties on it. I can say foo dot, first name equals fill, foo dot last name equals hack. And then I can return, in an MVC action, I could go return view of foo, with foo as the argument, as the model argument. Now in my view page, if I had a view page of dynamic, and by that I mean the type argument of the generic type argument of view page is dynamic, then within the view I could go model.firstname, or %% equals model.firstname, model.lastname. I won't get IntelliSense because it's a dynamic late bound access to that object, but I get the nicer, cleaner syntax as if I was dereferencing properties. I don't have to. It's nicer than doing like view data dictionary of bracket quote first name, and what's happening is that it's just accessing those properties on the expando object in a late bound fashion.
Okay, and this expando object that's living in system.dynamic, and that's part of the DLR. So you literally are saying dynamic foo equals new expando object.
Yes,
and then I can just go and say foo.this and foo.that, and it's going to automatically get whatever properties I want.
So you're under the hood, I don't know what exactly it's doing. I'm guessing it's just adding these things to some dictionary, and then later when you try to retrieve them, you just say foo.title, and it will do a dynamic lookup, and what's the value of title, and it will return that to you.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're adding, like this is the thing about the dynamic keyword, right? We joked about this before. It's statically typed as dynamic, and
yep.
they're dynamically adding these members at runtime.
Mm-hmm.
And you can go deep too. So you could say something dot address dot state, and it's gonna, that address could be an expando object. So you can have expandos within expandos. It's kind of like a hash table, but it feels like a dynamically generated object because it is.
Yeah. So if you can do that to retrieve it, but if you're creating it, you'd have to use the, let's say, dynamic O equals new expando, O dot address equals new expando, O
right,
dot address
right.
dot state equals anything.
Right, you have to set that one level deep first before you can keep going.
Yeah, but then when you get it on the other side, you just say O dot state dot address or whatever it is.
Right, right.
Or address dot state.
We're not saying expando object foo equals new expando object.
Right, we're saying dynamic foo.
Right. Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it's a strange hybrid of dynamic and static in a single language.
Yeah, well. It's probably not weird to some people. I mean, there are things like Groovy that has this stuff already. Groovy in Java has had expando type support for a while.
No, JavaScript. If you've done any kind of JavaScript, you're used to expandos.
Yeah, yeah. It's just such a funny name. I think that it's something that a lot of .NET programmers are not really
it
used
sounds
to.
Like a Marvel Comics villain. Expando.
Expando Man? So you've added the dynamic templating stuff to ASP.NET MVC 2. What else is new in MVC 2 that we should be watching for?
So one thing that's going to be new in our beta is render action. So this is something that's been available in our features library, our sort of prototype library.
Mm-hmm.
But now we're cleaning it up, giving it a bath, and adding it as a core feature of the framework. So what that does is that allows you from within a view to point it at some action method and call that method and get the result and put it in the view at that location. it's really for enabling a component compositional UIs where a classic case is I have a menu, and since each of my views doesn't want to also set up the data for the menu, an easy way to get the menu in the view is simply from the site.master. I'll just call render action menu. Mm-hmm. There are other approaches where you can set up the data first, maybe through action filters. But for a quick and dirty way of getting that there, you might call render action. Mm-hmm. Other things we're doing is I mentioned the strongly typed UI helpers, client validation improvements. One thing that a lot of people will be happy about, which is a very small thing, is that we're adding a blank project template. So right now with MVC, ASP.MVC, if you go file new ASP.MVC project, you get a lot of stuff in there. And when you hit F5, you get a full functional site with membership and the ability to register users. And that's great for a lot of people who just really want to play around with it and figure out how it works and how you can do that.
Hey, Scott. Hey, Phil. Hang on a second.
Yep.
Yes, sir?
Hey,
I'm doing a podcast right now with Phil Hack. Phil, Scott Guthrie says you're a nobody.
I can hear him.
I know you can hear him. We're actually recording right now. Do you need something, sir? Or can I call you back?
Sure. Do you want to be in my keynote?
Yeah, that's fine. Whatever you need me to do.
We probably don't want to record the podcast. Call me back later. I'll tell you and we'll sign you up.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'll call you back in a few minutes.
Cool.
All right. Bye. Yeah, sorry. I didn't mean to like kick you to the curb there, but I've got a special ring when Scott calls, What's the joke? I serve at the pleasure of the goo.
Stop everything.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry. So you were saying, Phil.
yeah, what was I talking about?
Yeah, I don't remember. Hey, but one thing I wanted to ask, though, backing up a little bit, that the render action thing, don't you think that there would be some purists that'll say that that's not a good idea?
Oh, definitely. In fact, the team itself, there's half of us who are kind of cringing at it, and there's half of us who are saying, this is one of the largest demanded features, and not everyone needs to be pure 100% all the time, right? Like sometimes you just need to throw this component on a master page, and it's very hard to do these composition in another way, and it's still possible to do it and have a mostly clean design. There's some drawbacks to it, though. For example, if you are using another new feature of beta that we're adding in beta is the async controller. Mm-hmm. And so the async controller allows you within your action method to, let's say, call an external web service or other services and then return the thread to the thread pool while it waits on whatever completion ports, and then and not block the thread. And then when the web service results come back, you finish executing the action method.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a great this is a thing that some of our bigger enterprise customers are really keen on, because they're calling all kinds of services and such, and they don't want to be blocking these threads. They really need the throughput. Mm-hmm. The problem there is that with render action, the render action is not going to take part in that asynchronicity, right? So if once you call your action method, you return the view, we're going to make yet another action call if you call render action in your view. And that call is going to be synchronous, even if your action method that you're calling is asynchronous. I don't think we put any blocks there. So we'll actually allow you to call render action on an asynchronous action method, mm-hmm. but we'll just call it synchronously. Myself, I'm pretty divided on this feature. And the way I rationalize it is that if I'm doing something... I shouldn't think about this.
Well, I mean, what I'm thinking, though, is that when we do stuff like that, are people going to think that we're... Are the, for lack of a better word, are the digerati going to think that we're dumbing down MVC by adding a feature that smells like web forms?
Well, I'd argue that it doesn't smell much like web forms. It's just it's the only way you can really easily do component UI, not component, compositional UI. So mm-hmm. this is not a control, right? This is not a post-back model. This is simply a way of saying, I want the results of this action method over here to show up over there in my view.
Right, but isn't now, the concern that it gives the view
who is asking for that action knowledge about things that really ought not know about?
So on that point, I'd argue, well, you're already giving that knowledge if you call action link within your view, right? Because you have to specify the name of the action and maybe the name of a controller if you're linking to another action.
Yeah, that's true.
And the point I made, someone asked me about this recently, and the point I made to them was, so yes, we are giving the view a bit of knowledge about the controller in action. Mm-hmm. However, we also have enough layers of indirection so that what you have in your view is a string, right? In general, if you call action link, you have a string that's a controller name and a view name. Or if you call render action, you have a string that's the action name. And through routing and through other means, you could say, oh, you know, I want that to actually point to some other method. You always have that ability. We don't build it in necessarily, but you always have that ability to say, to provide that level of indirection if the coupling of that render action to the controller action becomes a problem. Now, I a lot of people are using render action already. I've had people who I consider, you know, very well, very knowledgeable about MVC calling for it. Like Steve Sanderson, you know, told me he's happy that we're adding that in. So I think overall it will be a good thing. I think it, like any feature, there will be those who will abuse it, but then there will be those who are glad that it's there because they are responsible about it, and they're glad that, you know, we gave them the choice to be responsible about it.
Yeah, like, you know, it solved that. I mean, if it solves a specific scenario, then it seems okay. If we started leaning on it ourselves and using it all the time, then, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure I'll get some hate mail for it, and I'll get some love mail for it. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, all that talk of separation of concerns then kind of goes out the window.
Yeah, well, so I don't know about that necessarily. Like I said, so separation of concerns to me, and you know, maybe people disagree, doesn't sort of have to do with when code gets executed. It has to do with what knowledge code has of each other. So in a way, we've already violated some of that separation's concern with action link, right? The fact that a view knows what action and controllers are in order to generate a link to those things. Now, some frameworks, you know, take it a step further, and they abstract that away. I believe Struts works this way, where instead of action links, you would actually put like link, and then you'd put some string token in there, and then you have some XML config file that says, oh, this, you know, where you hook up a workflow. Oh, this token links to this action. This token links to that action. This token links to that action. Mm-hmm. You're free to do that approach in ASP.MVC. We haven't built it in, but you're free to do that approach. Hmm. But I think for the most part, that's one of the appeals of like Rails, was that, you know, we sort of streamlined these things and said, we'll sacrifice a tiny bit of architectural purity in order to enable people to get their job done.
Yeah, and that's always the challenge. I mean, with all things, I mean, that's kind of a good place to kind of wrap it up. But, you know, there's a constant tension between pragmatism and purity. And there are those purists that will say that you can get things done and keep things pure. And then there are those pragmatists that'll just say, you know, get her done. That looks pretty pure.
Yeah.
I will say I have spent more time with MVC staring at code and saying, I'm so close to keep, you know, to making this pretty. I've spent more time thinking about my code's aesthetic than I ever did with web forms, which I think is a testament to MVC, just in the sense that it gets me that close.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, regarding the purist and pragmatist argument, right? Like sometimes I take issue with the get or done philosophy sometimes, because often what happens there is you won't even try to approach or evaluate what, you know, being a little more, if you want to use the word pure, or thinking about maintenance concerns and stuff will get you, right? And whereas on the flip side, if you're on the strict purity argument, you sometimes forget that engineering is a series of trade-offs, and sometimes you do need to make, you know, small targeted, you know, compromises in order to get things done quicker. I used to take this approach with database designs, where I always strove for full normalization first, and then I would work back as I ran into problems like with perf and stuff, and did some targeted denormalizations where, you know, I would denormalize from the normalized database. So, you know, maybe that'll make sense to some people who worked with SQL or not. But I find that approach to work with purity, right? Is that I try to do the pure design first when I'm writing an application, and then I might work my way back a little bit to say, well, for performance reasons or to make this work reasons, I'm going to make these small compromises. And so I feel like that's the approach that, you know, we're kind of taking here sometimes, is that we could have done we looked at the 100% pure thing, and that's what, you know, we didn't have render action in version 1. But now we're seeing these pain points with that, and we're saying, well, maybe we need to move back a little bit and say, okay, some people have expressed, or many of our customers have expressed a real need for render action. We've told them, you know, all the concerns about the purity, but they want it anyways, and they promise they'll use it responsibly, nice. Right? Yeah. So it's like, well, okay.
No, that's cool. Well, it sounds like MVC is getting ready for the enterprise push. You want this to be used, you know, everywhere now. I mean, it's ready to go, right? I mean, there's no reason anyone shouldn't move to MVC 2 right now.
Not that I can think of. So the beta is going to have a go live clause, so okay. You can deploy it live. You know, to be clear, preview 2 had the absence of any clause relating to go live, or
the don't ask, don't tell clause.
Exactly. It was more of a, well, we didn't say you could, but we didn't say you couldn't.
Okay.
But beta is going to have an explicit. You know, there's no support in place yet, but if you want to go live, we feel that we're comfortable with that. What's funny is I read the clause today, and there is a slight restriction on the go live, not to be used for mission critical systems at nuclear plants or life support systems or the type of things that I don't think you run with a web app anyways. But I thought that was kind of amusing.
It actually says nuclear plant.
It does.
That is awesome, dude.
By the way, don't take my word for it. You know, consult a lawyer, blah blah blah. But read it yourself.
Wow, dude.
It mentions nuclear plants, life support systems, and some other stuff.
Does it say anything about nerd dinners?
No. Luckily, you're okay.
All right, cool. And I'm gonna get that updated. Then, actually, now that I'm a manager, I'll get John Galloway to update nerddinner.com and move it over to NBC2.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, thanks a lot, Phil. I really appreciate your time today.
Oh, thank you.
Well, this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.